cake at 7 o'clock.
Good evening. Welcome, everyone, to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Greg, and I am an alcoholic.
I'm Greg.
For those who care to join us, let us open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity
to accept the things I cannot change,
the courage to change the things that I can,
and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restroom exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up the small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that all those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundation of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. And I will now read the AA preamble. Did I read that? No. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening we are on step one. And right before we begin, oh, it's not that large at all today. I was afraid to look up. Usually Graham or David will usually break down that we're not experts on the book Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not an expert on the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We started this group in David's living room, basically so those guys could get all their sponsees and just do a step meeting. And we were just going over a step a week, and it just devolved. And it's a little light tonight, but usually it's pretty amazing to see how that little meeting has just blossomed. So I'm glad to be a part of that, and glad to be up here tonight with Debbie. And I'll just turn it over to you.
All right. We're on the internet.
That's Siri.
We're passing the basket already.
No. So we have paragraphs. Meeting number one.
Meeting number one.
There we go.
All right.
We're new.
I'm an alcoholic. We are Bush League pinch hitters. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Debbie.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi, Debbie.
All right. And so my sobriety date's October 24th, 1982, and I'm a member of the Simple Actions Home Group. And so this is where I am on Monday nights. And so I got a message this morning, can you do step one? So we're going to do step one tonight. And I think we break it down into two meetings on step one?
Yep.
No? Yeah, the physical and the mental. But anyway, we're talking physical tonight. And so my pages are different. So let me get back to here. The first one is page XXVI, so 26. And the doctor's opinion is where we're starting. All right, the physician who is where we're starting. The physician who, at our request, gave us this letter has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views in another statement which follows. In this statement, he confirms what we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe, that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life, that we were in full flight from reality, or were outright mental defectives. These things were true to some extent, in fact, to a considerable extent with some of us, but we are sure that our bodies were sickened as well. In our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. As laymen, our opinion as to its soundness may, of course, mean little. But as ex-problem drinkers, we can say that his explanation makes good sense. It explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account. And so, you know, when I read this when I was first coming around AA, I was in nursing school, and I would read about this allergy. And in nursing school, they teach you a little bit different things about allergies. And, you know, I don't have hives, and I don't have, you know, an allergic reaction that I'm learning in school. But what I do know is that when I drink alcohol, I react differently. It does something to my body that doesn't happen in the average normal drinker. And what I also know about allergies in the medical field is that they tend to get worse, and that you can die from them. And so that made a whole lot of sense with my drinking. Is like, yep, when I put booze in this body, it acts different than when my mother, say, puts booze in her body, which never happens, but anyway. And that it gets progressively worse. My drinking got progressively worse. And so it is talking about this. We have a, you know, the book tells us that our disease is centered in our mind later on, but what this is dealing with tonight is just the physical component. That when I put alcohol in me, it's a different reaction than what happens to other people, and that's what's the problem with me. It's what it does for me. It's what happens when I put that alcohol in me. And like it says, it explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account, because I would seem pretty normal. And, you know, I'm going to nursing school, I've got three jobs because I'm supporting myself, and I'm doing okay. And then I start drinking, and all of a sudden, it's not okay anymore. You know, and I love this, you know, we're in full flight from reality. We're maladjusted to life, you know. Alcohol fixed that for me. My life seemed totally, you know, I was just insecure, and I was scared, and I didn't know what I was going to do. And then I put booze in me, and all of a sudden, I was fantastic. Everything was wonderful. I'm going to get good grades, and I did get good grades. And life was good when I first started drinking. And so when I got to AA and I read this about outright mental defectives, I really wanted that to be the problem. I really wanted to be just the mental part. I didn't want to have the alcohol part because I wanted to keep drinking and just have the a mental disease of some sort. And that didn't work out for me either. The most important thing for me in this paragraph today is this. We who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe. This is, you know, we're already in the doctor's opinion. We haven't even got to page one, and we're talking about these suggestions that we have in this program. We've already got must believe that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. And so that's never going to change for me. My body is always going to act abnormally when I put alcohol in it. That's it for me.
That's me. Yeah, I'm Greg. I'm an alcoholic. Yeah, when I remember my first AA meeting. It's in a place where they don't have an AA meeting anymore, which makes me feel like I've been here a while. But they moved shortly after that. My very first meeting there, I think it was on Willowwood. And the very first thing that I heard in the AA meeting is there was a guy, and I don't know if I've seen him since, that kind of just brought to my attention the physical allergy, or just, I don't even know if he said physical, it was just the allergy to alcohol. And, you know, that was interesting, but I didn't think I have it. You know, I don't have an allergy to alcohol. I mean, alcohol makes me feel awesome. I mean, if that's the allergy, then okay. Oh, that's the allergy? alcohol does for me what nothing else did, and it acts, you know, it seems to do something different for me than it does for, you know, the person that's drinking next to me. Just to give you a little idea of this allergy, and that I wasn't sold on. I had just kind of, eventually, I just started going through my drinking career, which started when I was 15 years old, and it was the back of my buddy's car. He was 15. I don't know how he was driving this car. So he was driving, and he had just drank the day before for the very first time, and he had a great experience with this, and he's like, hey, you got to do this. So I'm in the back of the car, and another friend of mine, and I had a six-pack of Zima, which, well, I made up for that later. I had the Zima, and I drank my six-pack, and it was awesome. It was awesome. It was just like every, I had, I guess, somewhat of a traumatic childhood. I lost my mom to cancer when I was 9. I've got all this sort of baggage that goes along with that. And my dad wasn't real, he was there, but he wasn't really there. He kind of went off the deep end after that. And I basically just started kind of raising myself in a way. TV raised me, it did a good job. I don't want to discredit my dad, but, he did a lot as a single parent to go through that. But there was a lot of things that I just kind of had this independence about me. And I just wanted to just do my own thing. You really couldn't tell me anything. You just couldn't tell me anything. I knew everything. And, I was basically paying my own bills since I was 14 years old. I got a check from Uncle Sam for Social Security for my mom, and I had a job, and that was it. So all this fear about being alone and having to take care of myself and really not knowing what that looks like, not having maybe the model of a mother, father, or what an adult really looks like. I was just trying to figure it out. I didn't like everybody else's model and all my friends' parents. I didn't like that. So I just kind of had my own thing going. But when I had that drink, all that stuff I was carrying around with me, it was just gone. It was gone. And I was like, oh, this is it. I need this, And I remember the next time alcohol was available, it was just a couple days later. We're over at some girl's house, and they're like, oh, they had all this liquor, and their dad didn't care if they drank. And I was like, oh, that's cool, let's drink. And they're like, oh, we drank last night. And I just couldn't comprehend what the problem there was. So I was like, great, but they didn't want to drink. I drank, they're like, go ahead. So the second time I drank by myself. So the very first time I ever drank, I drank everything there was available. I loved it. It was awesome. My buddy's puking, I mean, he's almost, he probably had alcohol poisoning, but, we didn't want to get in trouble. So he just slept that off. And the second time I ever drank, I'm drinking by myself. So, looking back on it, it doesn't look that good, but that's not really what was at the forefront of my mind when I came in here. I was just hoping, yeah, I was the mental defect. It was something else. I didn't have this allergy, I gotta have something else. This isn't real, I'm just trying to, all the defense mechanisms are just coming up in this very first meeting, no, it can't be. And, I just got dealt a bad hand. Some stuff happened. I can clean it up. I'm just doing this to pay my, to pay my dues, like all my buddies that got DUIs. You just come here, you do your time, and then you go about your business. And I don't know. That stuck, though. I went home, and I had that up there, an allergy. So I think that's it for my allergy. But it's just the idea of being introduced. So here's the next paragraph. XXVIII, which is 28. Ooh, nice. We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. At once, having formed the habit, and found that they could not break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve.
All right. First, I want to say thank you to you because I have a brother who's 6 years younger than me who's an alcoholic, and my father died when he was 51, and he was at home and 13, and my sister and I were already gone. And I thank you for that because that gives me an insight on Kevin. You know, he had to have alcohol and drugs. But anyway.
We'll get to that.
Anyway, all right, so the phenomenon of craving. One thing I did, because I did get a little notice, and I read through the paragraphs, and I just wrote down words and looked them up, and I'm not going to read definitions to you, but I really suggest that you do that because you really might think you know what a word means, and then I didn't, and phenomenon was one of them that I looked up. But anyway, the first time I heard at an AA meeting, it's the first drink that gets you drunk, I knew exactly what that meant. I knew that from day one of drinking, which was at the Twin Drive-In in Virginia Beach, we had however many beers we had, and they said, if you drink it through a straw, you'll get drunk faster. I said, give me the straw, you know, and that's just how my father's was an alcoholic. Like I said, he died at 51 and never got sober, and so I knew what I thought booze was for, and it was not to control, it was not to have a sip, it was not to have a beer with friends, it was to get drunk, and so that was always my intention from day one of drinking. And so I knew also that once I started drinking that first drink, there was no stopping. As my drinking progressed, if I knew I could only drink one, I would not drink that one, especially if it was a work situation or something where I would embarrass myself. Or if I did drink that one, I would excuse myself and say, you know, I gotta go, whatever, and then go to the bar where I could drink like I wanted to drink. And so I knew that phenomenon of craving and you know, just that physical compulsion to have to go get another drink, and no matter what. That's another word I looked up, paramount. It is of paramount importance that I get that next drink, and no matter what it was. And I was a barroom drinker. I was a bartender. My husband drove a beer truck for Budweiser. To say our life was built on alcohol is to put it mildly. He drank like I did. Everybody I associated with, I thought, drank like I did. I've never yet met any of them at an AA meeting, though, and that still kind of baffles me, but they're in Maryland and I'm down here, so maybe they are. But I surrounded myself with people like me or what I thought was lower than me so that I didn't look so bad. And then my sister, you know, my sister's an alcoholic, my brother's an alcoholic, a little bit of a family disease going on here, but my sister, I remember when my dad died, my sister came home and, you know, after the funeral, we went out and got drunk. I mean, that's what you do. You leave mom at home with the baby brother and you go get drunk, and she put me like to shame. I was like passing out and she's like getting ready to go. So in my mind, you know, she was my older sister and anyway, she had a rough life, tried to kill herself, and I thought, when I get as bad as my sister, I'll quit. You know, as my drinking progressed, when I get as bad as her, I'll quit. You know, I really didn't know what was going on with my brother because he was 6 years younger, like I said, and I was out of the house. But I do remember coming home one time when Dad was still alive, and Kevin was in the bedroom throwing up, going, whiskey, whiskey. I drank whiskey, you know. And so it was what we did. It was my family tradition, as the song says. And so I wasn't going to give that up because then who would I be? You know, it was magic to me. It was everything I wanted. You know, that liquid courage. I was indestructible, and just, you know, just that egomaniac with the inferiority complex, because still inside was not feeling good enough, was not feeling like I belonged, but the outside sure looked like it was where it needed to be. And then this, let's see, so we've talked about the allergies, phenomenon of craving. Okay, so we've lost our self-confidence. The only time I had self-confidence was when I was drunk. I never had self-confidence when I was sober. Their reliance upon things human. I gotta say, really didn't have a lot of, because to me that's already bringing some spiritual aspect to this program in. I do remember being introduced to AA and saying, bunch of old men smoking. I was 27 and I was a smoker, but I wasn't going to go and know. And when I got my DWI and sitting in the back, and I had been to one AA meeting, I was sitting in the back of that police car going, okay, you gave me a chance. And I said no, and so now we're going to go a different way. You're not going to go willingly to AA, but you are going to go to AA is basically what I found out. My judge was a recovering alcoholic, and he thought it was a real good idea for me to go to AA, and so I did. Either that or jail, and so I didn't want to go to jail. And so my reliance upon things human, I still wasn't willing to open that door. I still thought that I can handle this. You know, I'm a smart girl. I can do anything I set my mind upon. That was my slogan. And, you know, I can handle this. Just give me some time here. You know, their problems pile up on them, and they become astonishingly difficult to solve. You know, and they just keep piling up and keep piling up and keep piling up. And I keep thinking, I can do this. I can do this. Just let me drink, and I can do this. It'll be okay. Thanks.
Yeah, there's just one thing in here, the alcohol in any form, that it cannot safely have alcohol in any form at all. And I had some experience with that too. You know, in high school, it wasn't easy to get alcohol. You know, I'm 15 and 16, 17 in high school. For some reason, you know, I grew up in Ohio. We could get weed pretty easily, though. So, you know, that was introduced, and that was fun times too. But the other forms of alcohol, you know, in my dorm room, I went to a boarding school, and in my dorm room, my roommate and I we would drink, you know, Scope, Listerine, and all that. There was like a 3-month period where we drank NyQuil every night, and kind of got hooked on it, I guess. And but you know, just anything, and there's alcohol in both of those, you know. So you know, that one rings true to me too. You know, that's another one of those memories I like to push way down there when I came in here, you know. But I am an alcoholic. I've identified that today, and these are some of the things that I did that, as I remember them, you know, as the fog lifts, that helped me remember that I am an alcoholic. You know, all those times that I want to feel like I'm not an alcoholic anymore. I'm cured, I'm fixed, I'm normal. You know, I feel, you know, I'm just like everybody else now. I got it. Can I just go maybe to one meeting a month or something? And, you know, I'll help people. I will. But, you know, but it's, you know, just trying to work myself out of the program. These are some of the things that, some of the memories that helped me realize that, you know, I need to be here, because if I don't, if I'm not here, if I'm not doing these things, you know, the Scope and the NyQuil, I mean, that'll just lead to other stuff. You know, I like to see what I can get away with, pretty much. So yeah, all the other substances were there too, and alcohol in many different forms. But you know, prescription pain medicine, that was always a fun additive to drinking, you know, certain types of cocktails or whatever. So yeah, just anything that makes me feel not normal, anything that makes me feel not the way I did before I was 15 years old, I don't want to feel like that. You know, I don't like that feeling. So I'll do whatever. But I mean, it always comes back to alcohol. When we're talking about the allergy, you know, they're talking about, you know, because I really wanted to pick this apart and analyze it. What is the allergy? If you find that you can't consume, you know, one drink, like, what is that? What do you mean? One drink. Yeah, I don't, that's not my experience. I've never wanted to have a drink. Now, I've gone out before and promised I'm going to have a drink, you know, and it just didn't work out that way, you know, like, well, you know, and I justify it. My brain is just, you know, I think these are all my ideas. And first I'll have the first drink, and I'll just tell you a little bit about how this looks in my mind when I have the first drink, because I'll have my one. I said I was going to have one. I can have one. All right. I'm a heavy drinker. When I drink a lot. So one is not really one for me, right? It's not really one. I can have two or three, and really I can drive. I'm going to have a, you know, a 0.002. It's not going to be a big deal. You know, it's a couple of beers. And then I get those, you know, my marked amount that I had. Now I made a mark, and that's it. Then I hit that, and then I don't really care so much that, you know, I was like, well, I've had three, you know, I'm drinking, whatever. And then I you know, it just goes to, you know, I can't even get myself into the taxi cab. You know, I'm like, I'm not coming home, you know, like, that's not, I there were a few times I really just wanted to have one. I went out with all intention of having one. It wasn't a BS lie that I told my wife. It was, that's what I'm going to do. I've got to get back home. You know, running a company. I've got three children. I've got to get home. You know, I've got responsibilities. One drink. And so that didn't happen with all my willpower. So, you know, again, looking back on it, okay, I have to concede a little bit that I might have this allergy that they're talking about. So, we'll go into the next paragraph. Did I? We are on, still, it's just X's and V's and stuff. The same ones.
It's the last paragraph on 28.
XXVIII 28, same little deal. Did you want to read?
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented, unless they can again experience this sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks which they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful, with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. Yeah, I had to look up a whole bunch on that one. You know, resolution and psychic change, and you know, this is a big paragraph here. You know, I loved getting drunk, and that's why I drank. You know, I also know that when I hear that psh, I'm not thinking somebody's opening a Coca-Cola. That is not what goes through my head when I hear that sound. And I know, especially from Tendon Bar, I know what that ease and comfort is before you even get the drink in you. You just, I'm here, I'm okay, I'm gonna have it, you know. And so I knew all that stuff, but in my head I was still saying, well, I can't be an alcoholic, because I would see the man come in that's 45 years old, and he'd buy two little shorties of the cheapest vodka at 8 o'clock in the morning and go in the bathroom, and we'd time him, you know, it took 15 seconds, go in, drink it, and then take the other one for the road. That's an alcoholic, you know, and I got sober in Baltimore, you know, the Skid Row bombs under the 29th Street Bridge, that's the alcoholic. I can't be an alcoholic, you know, I'm just getting drunk, that's all. That I want to get drunk. It's not that I can't control it. That's what I want to do. You know, I'm still thinking it's my decision. You know, I had no intention of staying sober, and then as I kept drinking, and especially as I kept drinking and going to meetings, that'll mess you up. Let me tell you, that doesn't do a lot for your drinking. And so I would do, you know, what they say, and more about alcoholism. You know, I would do the count. Okay, I can have six drinks. I never started with one. never. And I would count my little swizzle sticks and about how many I had. And then by that time, I didn't care. You know, I didn't care. And then you get to this resolution the next day of, oh, my God, I will never do that again. Then I truly believed in God when I was saying that prayer. You know, just get me out of wherever I am and get me home. Let my car be okay once I find my car. And you know, just that total remorse, and I am never going to do this again. And usually that was Monday morning. And so I would go to work, and I would feel terrible all day Monday because I did not miss work very rarely. I'm a terrible liar. I called the bar one day and said I wouldn't be at work because I had car trouble, and they said, we know your car's in the parking lot. And so I'm a terrible liar, but I would always try and go to work, and I would feel terrible at work all day Monday. I wouldn't drink Monday night. And Tuesday, I would start, you know, maybe be able to eat something again. Wednesday, I'm feeling pretty good. I might even think about doing something healthy. And then Thursday, I would be drunk again. And I could never get past, and then I would be Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday drunk. You know, I would go to work, but I would be drunk every night. And I don't know, truly, I don't know how I stayed up. And, you know, I would stay till the bars closed, and I worked at a little neighborhood bar that opened at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I would be there. You know, those drunks depended on me, and I kind of knew what that felt like, and so I would be there when that opened. And so I know what that ease and comfort is by taking a few drinks, you know, and you know, we succumb to the desire again. And you know, it talks about over here, we didn't mention about that phenomenon of craving. That's one of the markers, you know. It's like that never happens into somebody that's not an alcoholic. They don't crave another drink. They think, oh no, I'm getting drunk, I've had enough. Or, oh, I got sick. And our slogan is, what a small price to pay to have another drink, you know. I remember this one girl, oh no, I, you know, that made me sick. I don't understand why that's a stopping factor in this, but anyway. But she did, because she didn't have that phenomenon of craving. She didn't have that thing inside of her saying, I got to have another one. You know, so emerging remorseful, firm resolution, never to drink again, repeated over and over again. Unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. And, you know, I got to tell you, I went to AA for a long time, and I guess, you know, just not drinking is a psychic change. So I guess there's degrees of psychic change. I'm definitely an educational variety of spiritual experience kind of person. I've not seen any burning anything unless I lit it on fire myself. And so I still kind of thought, I've got this. You know, I want to stay sober. I'm doing this. You know, I don't need any help. I'll have a sponsor. I'll call her once I've figured out what it is that I need to do, and I'll tell her. You know, she had a little cartoon that said, this is you, Debbie, and it said, agree with me now, it'll save so much time later, because I would just argue my point to the death, you know. And so, you know, I just really didn't see a lot of this. And the more I read it today, the more true it is for me today. And I haven't drank in a long time, but it changes my life still on a daily basis. This program is truly amazing to me. And so that psychic change, that's what we're gonna talk about later, but we'll still talk about the physical right now. So that phenomenon of craving, that resolution, I'll never do it again, and yet doing it again and again. But by Friday, I'm thinking, this is what I wanna do. I was crazy Monday. That was just a weird fluke. It won't happen this weekend. I won't drink that, or I won't go there, or I won't, you know, go to the Colt game or the Oriole game or whatever, and just change the surroundings and the circumstances, and it'll be better. But it never got any better.
Yeah, my my experience is very much the same as far as the I guess you were kind of going in the obsession, but it is the phenomenon when we develop the craving, you know, and that process passed through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. And you know, that happened. I'd do the spree, swear it off, and the same pattern, everything that you were saying, mine just was condensed in a 24-hour, you know, turnaround. I worked really hard in the morning. You know, I woke up early. That was my penance for, you know, all the mischief I've done. And I just started drinking the water and eating the right stuff. And then I'd go work, and I'd never use the air conditioning because I didn't deserve it. And I'd have the, you know, in the summer, I'd have the car windows up, and I'd just start sweating it all out. And then I'm an electrician, and I was wiring up these sunrooms and just close all the windows in there and just sweat it all out, you know. And this is what I would put myself through. Because, you know, I felt bad, You know, I felt bad about it. Also, I knew I was going to get it out of my system and I was going to feel better afterwards. But and about noon, I didn't want to throw up anymore. You know, I could eat again. And I'm done 3:30, you know. It's 5 o'clock somewhere. Mm-hmm. You know, but I woke up earlier than everyone else, so it's 5 o'clock for me. You know, so I couldn't even wait till 5. You know, I heard that in songs. I've seen it on signs. I really wanted to wait till 5 a lot of times. Like, just wait till 5. And then I'd convince myself of all those reasons. Well, you did wake up early. It was an extra hard day, you know. You kind of drank light on Monday, you know, so this is kind of making up for that. Like, just whatever. I just justify it. And, you know, I'm the only person, I'm a go-to guy, I'm the only person that I have to check any of my decisions through. You know, I'm not used to calling parents or having any parental figure at all. You know, is that cool, Greg? Yeah, that's cool. Go ahead. You know, well, all right then. and I would do this. So when I swore it off, and I really meant it sometimes the next morning, like, you know, I'd wake up and had broken things, you know, people are crying and, you know, things just ripped off the wall and it's like, oh, that was bad, you know. She must have really pissed me off last night, you know. So, wasn't my fault. I mean, I drank forever and I never did any of this stuff, you know. It's the circumstances. It's got to be the circumstances. So, but I can't do that again. You know, I'm gonna show everybody that it, you know, I don't need to drink all the time. So me not drinking was just doing other drugs for a week, and that's how I didn't drink. And so as far as being sober, yeah, I don't have a long time, like a couple of days. You know, I remember I quit drinking. The very first time I even tried to quit drinking, because why would you do that in the first place, right? But there was a girl, and I had been drinking and playing video games for about 4 years, and that was my college years, and so I partied with college people. I just didn't go to school, and which was good for me. I mean, so. Anyway, I thought it was a pretty good deal. I had it figured out. You know, those suckers have to go to school. Anyways, so that's what I did. Finally, someone was interested in this type of behavior, but that's a different chapter, I think. But anyways, you know, I wanted that. So she's like, you know, she's cool with the partying and everything, but you drink too much. Her words were, the first party we went to together, she's like, "Your drinking disgusts me," and I remember that I was and I felt really proud about that. I really did. I'm like, you know, because she's hanging out with all these college guys doing all these cake stands and stuff, but I've got my glass full of Everclear and a bottle of wine, and that's my introduction to how Greg drinks. And I drove 6 people home that night. I've never had a DUI, but I just wanted to throw that out there. I damn well deserved one. So, and I, you know, and that was a sketchy experience. So, hey, cut down on the drinking. Well, you should not drink anymore, which that's not going to happen, but I wanted to show her I can not drink. And, the day I quit drinking, I got the flu or something, because I got really sick, and, I really thought that that's what it was. I really thought I was sick, and, you know, I didn't know about detoxing or any of that stuff. I didn't know what an alcoholic was. I just didn't know. I had been thinking, maybe I'm an alcoholic. I do drink a lot, but, you know, so I made up all this other stuff that an alcoholic is, with the bridge and the urine, and, you know, and then, after I start crossing some of these things off, I get more specific. Well, not my urine, you know. And and then I got to make a new list for that one. That's no fun. But I don't want to talk about that story. So, you know, I just keep checking the boxes, and I keep making new boxes, and I keep checking them off, and it's getting worse. And but anyway, that particular experience was pretty early on. It was right when I was dating my wife, who we just celebrated 8 years married, and we just started dating then, and I got sick. I got through this sickness and basically just kind of slid back into it. Like, well, I did it a week, you know, ish, And they're like, well, yeah, you know, celebrate. Let's celebrate your sobriety with some drinking. So, and then just kind of slid back into that, you know. But I realized then it was not okay. It was not socially acceptable the way I was drinking. So at that point, and that was about 21, I started hiding it. From 21, I've been high. I was hiding alcohol ever since then. Whenever we'd all do a shot, you know, okay, let's take a shot and go smoke a cigarette. I'll be right there, you know, one more for me. You know, it wasn't enough. But, you know, I didn't know any of this was alcoholism. I just needed more. I'm a good drinker. I can drink more. I don't know what your problem is about me drinking too much, because sometimes I couldn't even get drunk. So, I mean, how cool am I? anyways, that's craving. Yeah. Yeah, I craved it. I did, and I could all those resolutions first thing in the morning. You know, can't do that anymore. It's a 24-hour thing. I hear it a lot. You know, people say that throughout the week, and I was just able to justify it within 24 hours. Sweat it out, wash, rinse, and repeat. And that's my experience on drinking on a daily basis.
You want to read that one?
No, but I'll do it. Okay, we're on XXIX, which is 29. I do not hold those who believe that alcoholism is entirely a problem of mental control. I have had many men who had, for example, worked a period of months on some problems or business deal, which was able to be settled on a certain date, favorably to them. They took a drink a day or so prior to the date, and then the phenomenon of craving at once became paramount to all those interests, so that the important appointment was not met. These men were not drinking to escape. They were drinking to overcome a craving beyond their mental control. There are many situations which arise out of the phenomenon of craving, which cause men to make the supreme sacrifice rather than continue the fight.
Okay. I just have to say, I never had anyone tell me that I drank too much. Like I said, I surrounded myself with people who drank like I did. I did have one guy tell me that I was a bitch when I was sober, though. So I just thought I needed to stay drunk. You know? And it would be okay. All right. So here's where the paramount. Okay, the last line there. It became paramount to all other interests. Okay. So it didn't really matter. I can't really come up with an example in my life where there was something that's going to happen favorable to me and then I got drunk, because I just got drunk. And, you know, I don't know if I'm just really lucky or what, but I was in nursing school, and another friend of mine was in law school, and we would go out like the night before an exam, because that was my good luck charm. And I would do well on the exam, you know, so I don't know, but I would always just get drunk. And work, you know, when you're a bartender, it's not a real high standard to hold up to. So it wasn't, I do remember going to work one day and they said, you have to apologize to Pete. He was the owner of the bar. It's like, why do I have to apologize to Pete? And we haven't really mentioned that. You know, I never really think about drinking except at an AA meeting, especially on the first step. But anyway, I worked at this bar, and I was a blackout drinker, and they said, you need to apologize to Pete, and I apologized to Pete, and I don't know to this day what I did, and I was afraid to ask what I did, because you just didn't know. And so I didn't have a real high bar that I had to meet up to as far as a good outcome in my business deal. I was sober once I graduated nursing school, and so I never had that you know, the whole drug thing of, you know, do you want your pain medicine or do I want your pain medicine kind of thing? Or although I have worked with people. I'm glad I didn't have that, because that would be very difficult. That would be very difficult to fight that, because once you have that craving, there's going to be no stopping. It doesn't matter how bad you're hurting. If I want it and I need it, it's going to be me. It's going to be for me. And there was just no question asked about that. You know, just the whole, as we'll talk about later, the whole selfishness and self-centeredness. It was all about what can I get out of this situation? You know, what can I do to get through this situation, to survive this situation? I do remember going through the health periods we kind of both mentioned a little bit. One was I was going to start going roller skating. And so they told me where the skating rink was, and I was supposed to meet these other people that were getting healthy from their drinking that night, too. And I couldn't find the roller rink, but I definitely knew where the bar was. And so I never got to the roller skating rink, but I got to the bar and happened to hook up with my first husband at that night, because I didn't go skating. I should have gone skating. I should have gone skating.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, business deals or stuff. Yeah, I was pretty accustomed to just doing the deal with alcohol in my system. Alcohol never really, ruined my normal persona, because I was drinking all the time. It's just funny. I'm hearing some of the stuff coming out of my mouth, and I don't mean to overqualify myself here, but it's just like I did drink every day. I drank 151 every day. I hit it. I did all this stuff, and my problem when I came in here was I didn't think I was an alcoholic. I just drank a lot. I didn't know what an alcoholic was. And that still can be my problem today, is saying, I'm not an alcoholic. I just went through that 10-year drinking daily deal, That's all that was. And then, so whatever it is, that's still what I'm fighting today, is this very first step is admitting that I'm an alcoholic. Because, yeah, I admitted was drinking alcoholically, but admitting that I'm an alcoholic, I am an alcoholic without a drink. What is that? What is it to be an alcoholic that's not drinking anymore? That doesn't sound like an alcoholic to me. I'm just a guy that comes here and that's it, just hangs out with other people who don't drink. But It's when the alcohol was taken away from me that I really started getting to experience alcoholism. That's when it started not feeling good. I didn't know, my whole young adult life, I never really felt anything. Just numbed it up, no matter what it was, or tried to make it better. Or whatever emotion it was, I was going to enhance that good feeling, or I was going to numb the other, the bad feelings. And I just, I had no experience of just going through life, going through an experience, especially a difficult experience, being sober, and I have had no defense mechanisms for that. I just did not know how I could possibly do any of this stuff. Like, you guys' life is just different than mine. I have real big problems, and you guys just don't understand what I'm going through, and I really need this drink and all the stuff that, I brought from, and I'm just, when I got in here, I was fighting it hard. I just wanted to be different. I just wanted this, I was going to find the loopholes. I was going to find why this wasn't working. I came in to AA kind of cocky, like, this isn't gonna work anyways, doesn't matter, do my time. And then I'm hearing some of this stuff, the allergy of, and I see the word phenomena of craving. I'm like, phenomenon, they just saying that because they don't know, because it's not real. So it's just some crap. And but I'm fighting it, and I could see myself fighting it real intently, because there was something to this. I didn't know what it was. I just knew that I couldn't stay sober for a day, trying my absolute hardest. So I asked for a sponsor right away. I didn't even know what that was, but it's like, it sounds like somebody that's gonna help me. So I asked for that right away, and I was able to stay sober for a day, and then another one, and another one by doing the stuff, which I hopefully will go over more later. Who read this one?
I think you did.
I did. Five's a doozy.
All right. Page 30. All right. Okay. All these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. And so I had to look up that abstinence because, oh, we have more?
You want to do appendix two? Or, yeah, all of it is five.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm sorry.
See, I didn't have that. Is that the whole appendix in the back?
Well.
Where are we?
I guess there's two readings. Go ahead. Sorry. You want to do that, and then I'll read that.
There you go.
All right.
There you go. All right, so. So I looked up abstinence because, you know, everybody, well, I don't know if everybody, but in my mind, it means you're abstaining from sex. And so abstinence, I'll read this one, refraining from activities that are experienced as pleasurable. And so to me, the alcohol was still pleasurable, you know. You know, I think that just kind of recaps it. It is talking about, we skipped the paragraphs where it's talking about the different types of drinkers. And no matter what type you are, whether, you know, you're normal in every other respect except for alcohol, or you're living under the bridge, they all have that phenomenon of craving. We all have that phenomenon of craving, that manifestation of an allergy. And that's what sets us apart, me apart, from a non-alcoholic. And so, for me, I'm not a first nighter in AA, and I do remember, you know, still having to go to meetings and still having to go to the probation officer and all that, and still wanting to drink. And so I got drunk, and it was not a slip. It was well planned out. Friday night, this is it. And I worked with a lady who later, there's a lot of God in my early sobriety, but I wouldn't have known that at the time. But anyway, she had loaned me a copy of her big book, and she later became my sponsor. But I remember, and I worked with her. And so the next day at work, I said, you know, I got drunk last night, blah, 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 blah. And she said, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to keep on drinking. And she didn't say, oh, no, Debbie, you need to read this book and you need to not drink. And I am so, so very grateful that no one in AA has ever told me you can't drink. You need to stop drinking. Now, I will tell you, it works better. The steps work better if you're not drinking, for me anyway, is my personal experience, because I've tried it both ways. And so I continued to drink for about three more months, still going to meetings, still getting the slip sign, still going to the probation officer, and that progression, because I just didn't think this disease was going to progress. I was not going to end up like you because I'm too smart, you know. And so the disease started progressing in me, and the things that they told me that I said would never happen started happening. And, you know, I've done things in my life in AA that I never did drunk, you know, and there's a speaker in Baltimore that used to talk about that. You know, I never had a DT until I came into AA, and you know, it's just, I had to be willing to listen, and we haven't really talked about surrender tonight either, but for me to surrender to these steps, to this program, to me not running the show, running the world, running, you know, I had to have every drink it took to get me in this seat, to keep me in this seat, to believe in this twisted little mental mess up here that I'm an alcoholic and I cannot drink successfully. And I don't know what else we're reading.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and read this one. It's the appendix two. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God conscious. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. And when I came into AA, I had drank myself totally into militant atheist, you know, with the death of my mother and just the way that my life turned out and all the praying I did. The boarding school that I had attended was a Christian school. I went to, you know, church school the whole way through, and I knew the Bible really well. And, you know, I was doing dimensions of the ark and stuff like, you can't fit the animals in that, you know, and presenting that to my teacher. And, you know, I've been doing that since I was a kid. And I had abandoned religion because I had, you know, torn apart Christianity, and the rest of them were just going to be even easier. You know, that's what I brought to AA, and then I see God on the wall, and this is your answer for me not drinking is more church, you know, or more God or praying. Like, I did all this stuff, and I drank right after I got baptized, and I, you know, drank after this and after the Vesper ceremony, and I drank during it all, and I said, this isn't going to work, and sorry, I needed this to keep my words. No, you're good. But I was just about the spiritual experience. So I was not willing to have that. I was here in belligerent denial and intolerance of all of this. And I think my personal growth in AA has been just a willingness to say, I don't know. You know, I don't know. That keeps getting a little bit bigger, and I keep believing it a little bit more. You know, I don't know what's out there. I don't have all the answers. You know, I don't know that there is no God. You know, I don't know these things. I've developed a willingness in AA. I didn't bring it here. You know, I'm like, not like, hey, I'm willing to do this so I can believe in God and not drink. You know, that's not how I came here. You know, I came here kicking and screaming, but I was dragging myself, you know, so I had both no, yes, we're doing this, no. So, you know, I mean, that's how I came in here, and just developing a willingness, and without having any belief or believing in anything, it's been a fact to me that there's a power that exists in these rooms when we all get together, and it's a power that's greater than myself that has been able to keep me sober one day at a time for, you know, multiple years now, and I'm a guy that couldn't do it for a day. So, I mean, I don't like using the word miracle, but I haven't found a better word for that yet. So anyways, that's us.
I think that's a wrap. We got to pass this seventh tradition basket.
You want to do that?
Started.
I don't know where the green card is. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure not only their group, but also the intergroup, central office and local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any AA related announcements?
My name is Kevin, I'm an alcoholic.
Kevin.
Brand new meeting, Tuesday night, 7:00. It's called Live Again. It's the third week in a row that we're having it, and it's growing exponentially. So it's a 12-step study where we have a readout of 12 step, or the 12 and 12. And then we have a speaker talking about that step, and then we have open discussion on that step after that. So please come out Tuesday, 7:00. It's at 212 West 29th Street, which is the house. So we hope to see you there.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Lydia. And I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Lydia.
49th Street Living Sober is having a speaker and cake for no reason on August
15th
at the normal meeting time at 5:30. So please join us.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Hey, Joe.
Hey, Joe.
July 30th, my only group of men is having a dinner and a meeting, and the team starts at 5:30, and I'm a speaker, but I'm a speaker, and it's going to be 2:30 to 6:00.
Thanks, Jessica.
Okay, Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members? Very good. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. Okay, there is literature available in the back by the coffee. Please see any of our home group members after the meeting. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. And in closing, thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting. Are we doing one?
Plaza del Sol.
At Plaza del Sol. And can I get a volunteer for 164?
Hi, I'm John. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, John.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thanks. Please help me close with the Lord's Prayer.
I'm hooked up.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Keep coming.